This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and a surprise guest. My original guest has got lost on the way, so we've got the lovely Andy Jones, who's going to be our very own Andy Jones, because he's going to be on Vectis, part of the family, producing a funky art and soul show. Welcome, Andy.
Welcome. Thank you.
So, good, brilliant. So, you're going to be our latest new recruit.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
So, what brought you to these shores?
Big interest in radio. I listen to radio most of the day when I'm not doing my own music at home. It's always in the car, always in getting up in the morning. The radio's always on in the morning. Basically, every time. So, I'm interested in you know, the whole aspects of music, all different stations, music, as I love music anyway. That's my first love. So,
what's your what's the kind of, you know, soundtrack to your life? What's the one song that just brings back so many memories for you?
I mean, there's so many, but I'm very into the Beatles. So I'd say I'm the walrus that would bring me back down to, you know, being a kid and being with my dad, and then certain bits of the song saying about the pulling the knickers down on the song, and you know, laughing, and
I just don't remember that line, Andy.
No. That line is in there.
Are you sure?
You've been a naughty girl, let your knickers down, or something like that, and you know, that you know, being with my dad and kind of laughing in the car when that was coming on, and
that's
my number one Beatles song of all time. That's my favourite. So
I was thinking, you know, that Beatles song, When I'm 64.
Yes.
And when we used to listen to it when we were babes.
Yeah.
And you kind of did laugh at that as well, because you thought, I'm not going to be 64. Well, I am, but not for ages. And then, bang, you're nearly there. And you think, oh, how did that happen? I knew I was going to get old, but not so fast as this.
And it mentions the Isle of Wight on there as well. So when my kids used to listen to it when they were young, they said, oh, you know, and then it coming up to here on the, you know, when it says the Isle of Wight bit, yeah. You know, they loved that. So, and there's a big thing, in, obviously, at the moment with Sergeant Pepper's, is it the 50th anniversary?
Yes, I think
And obviously, that's on Sergeant Pepper's as well. So, When I'm 64. And that is, you know, one of the best albums of all time, isn't it?
No. Oh, it's so iconic, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I do like the album after that one, Magical Mystery Tour. That's probably one of my favourites, because I'm the Walrus is on there as well, so, well, but...
And forgive me if I'm wrong, but that won't be the sort of music you'll be playing on your show.
The thing is, if you type in I am the Walrus into YouTube and put funk by the side of it, you'll come up with some strange songs with anything, you know, like a sitar, an Indian guy playing sitar with, you know, with some funk going on in the background. So it basically, my show will be anything that's got funk in it. So it could be funk to disco to hip-hop to drum and bass, new stuff, old stuff, easy listening, anything with just some kind of, you know, some good bass, some good drums. That's what I'll be playing. So
for anybody like me who's a little bit ignorant of what funk jazz might be, you said you could include things like Boogie Nights.
Yeah, I mean, from the mainstream, you know,
it's that kind of
disco,
sound.
Some disco, Boogie Nights, but I will be going on to the kind of obscure, but obviously, you know, you want to cater for all kind of tastes, so there will be some obscure, there'll be some covers of, you know, of Beatles tunes, but funk stuff, and there'll be, you know, obviously some James Brown to, you know, to more recent stuff that you hear on the radio now, like maybe Bruno Mars, 24 Karat Gold, kind of stuff like that. So a broad spectrum, but, you know, of my taste, basically.
Yeah, it's your show.
Yes, and that's it. And it's in the evening, so I can play what I want.
So you think. But it's not just going to be you spinning the decks, is it? You're going to have guests?
I'm going to have guests, yeah. I'll have just people and islanders that I know, musicians on the island. Few, you know, maybe some famous people, got famous relatives, kind of. I can think of a few now. Yeah, a whole range of people that, you know, that
I
know.
Do you want to give us a little flavour, a little sneaky peek into who we might be able to expect?
Well, I've got a friend who whose brother is actually the original Boba Fett.
Okay.
And in Star Wars, if you don't know that is.
Well, I was trying to look knowledgeable, and I thought the listeners are bound to know.
Yeah, so on the original Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and... Return of Jedi, they had Boba Fett, and the guy who plays it is called Jamie Bullock.
Right.
And I know his brother who lives on the island. And his other brother, his main brother, his half brother is Robert Watts, who's actually one of the producers of Star Wars and Indiana Jones and all kind of stuff like that. So it's just kind of people like that can have, you know, some brief chats on the
You say it casually, people like that. I mean, they're mega stars.
Well, the guy, you know, he was in some eating comedies. His name's Nigel Bullock. He was in some eating comedies in the early stages, but he kind of didn't really follow his acting career. So, but he'd be talking about, you know, his brothers and stuff like that. So,
fantastic.
Some people from the Bees, Clev, who used to be the kind of drummer in the Bees, he'd be coming in talking about some reggae stuff with me. So we're going to I'm going to do some features of different features, maybe do a Northern Soul kind of little feature and some reggae little features of the studios and the production and the people behind the productions of reggae tunes and stuff like that. So it's going to be that's why I want to call it the Funky Art and Soul Show, because it's going to be a bit more of everything in it. So
yeah, and you've also mentioned to me earlier that you were putting some comedy skits in it.
Yeah, just I can't really explain it at the moment because I don't want to spoil it, obviously. Just a little I might be talking, it just be kind of little bits pieced together from you know, films and comedy series and stuff like that, and just in my own kind of weird special way. So
I'm really intrigued by that.
Yeah.
So you're not gonna give me another hint?
Nothing, because right. I like production, so I'll be producing the show So you know, I won't be just coming in and sitting down and then talking over and putting records and talking over them. You know, it would be a well-produced show beforehand, so there'd be a lot of effort going into it before.
I should hope so.
So, you know,
definitely. So who are your comedy heroes?
Comedy heroes are the young ones, from, you know, early 80s. Obviously the young ones are the, you know, one of the best, I think, series that come out. And then you've got League of Gentlemen after that.
They've gone on to magnificent things, haven't
yes.
they? League of Gentlemen.
League
all
of Gentlemen.
Done incredibly well.
There's some American comedians, Doug Stanhope I like. I can't remember the other one, the other American one. But yeah, obviously the old comedy heroes, Morecambe and Wise and all stuff like that, but you know, more obscure stuff I like.
I worked with Nigel Planer.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Once
I've seen him in Richmond, walking past.
Oh, he's very tall, isn't he?
Yes.
Not a happy chappy, but well, he certainly wasn't when he met me, because I worked in advertising, and I wrote a commercial. Well, it was a radio's commercial for a kettle descaler. Oh. Such was my glamorous life, and we thought he would make an excellent voice as this miserable sort of scaled up, furred up kettle. And he sort of trotted along, and then only then were we told that he couldn't do that character. So we just had to have Nigel Planer as the scaled up kettle,
right.
Which didn't thrill him any more than did us, because it wasn't the downbeat, deadbeat voice we were hoping for.
Okay.
Yeah, and not the highlight of his career. Probably not on his CV. And if you asked him about it, it'd just deny all knowledge.
Probably.
But it exists in you know, in a dusty old cassette tape somewhere. Somebody's got that. Yeah, no, but they're fantastic. So, oh, well, I'm expecting wonderful things of this. And what is it, an hour?
Well, 2 hours. 2 to 3 hours, probably 2 hours, I expect.
And do you know what slot you're going to get?
No, not yet.
Okay.
So it'll be in the evening. Not sure yet. Depends on Macca, doesn't it? So
yeah,
he's the boss.
So are you learning? Is Macca sort of teaching you the technical ropes? But I imagine you've got quite a good knowledge of that. Obviously, if you're a producer, you must know that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just learning the computer system. Basically, I've been through it, so I do know what I'm doing. It's just So
as soon as
the better. As soon as I can get on the radio, the better.
Definitely, yeah. Perhaps you can come and assist me with mine, because I'm rubbish. Macca will tell you, you know, this board, complete anathema to me. Complete anathema. It's just like, it's kind of like word blindness, but with buttons, I suppose.
Well, the mixer's fine. That's easy. It's just on the screen. It's the computer and the tune's coming in, and make sure that the news is coming in and the adverts and stuff like that. So that's the more important bit, isn't
it? I know. So. But that's why I don't have music, because it's just very complicated. So if you've got music and comedy skits and guests, well,
yeah.
that's juggling, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why I'm going to sit in on Tom's show later. Tom Headfunk on at 5. He, you know, I've listened to his show a couple of times now. Well, no, a lot of times. So, and he does a really good show. So I want to sit on that and see how he kind of works the magic. you know, on the screen, on the buttons, so I can just see what I can do and what I can't do. So
you're talking about on the screen, and we know it's all digital now, but have you somewhere at home or in a lockup got loads and loads of vinyl?
Yes. Yes.
Can you hazard how many miles, yards, feet and inches have you got?
Not that many. I've had kids early, so kind of my music career kind of went from when I was about 21 and when I had my first child. Hello, Paris. She won't be listening, but she'll be working. So my record day collecting from then kind of went down a bit. So I'd say I've got a few thousand, I'd say, at least.
So in terms of wall space, what would that be? If you were to put them end to end, what do you reckon?
Well, probably about... Cool, that's a question. I'm not great with maths.
Don't worry about it.
A wall, like a a 15-foot wall, maybe, of records, yeah.
Wonderful. And have you got a particular song? You said your daughter's name was Paris. Have you got a particular song that you associate with her being younger and when she was born or anything like that?
Well, they all love the Beatles because I always played the Beatles to the children. Yellow Submarine. We always watch the film The Yellow Submarine, even though it is a bit wacky, but they watch that.
It's interesting when the new generations come along and they land up having enjoying the same music as we did back in the day when it originally came out.
It's timeless. The Beatles stuff is timeless. My oldest son, he's 22, Jaden, he produces music as well. He does kind of more of a drum and bass kind of dance stuff. He's had a couple of records out on a label. He's doing all right. He works, but as we all do, so he works, but he does music in his spare time, so we all, that's what I do as well, so...
So they followed in your footsteps?
Well, he is. Yeah. My other two younger boys... they're very musical as well, so I'm kind of, I don't force them to do anything, but they, I would say, oh, come up and do some music and play the keyboard, or have a little go, do some beats on the computer. So yeah, they are into it.
Yeah, it's interesting that you're obviously one sort of dad, and Noel Gallagher from Oasis is a completely other. I was reading an interview with him, and he was saying if his son wanted to get into music, he said he'd just sit him down, pick up a guitar, and start playing, they'll say, right, you're never going to reach those dizzy heights, dream on, now put the kettle on, mate, One way of dealing with it, isn't it?
That's it. Guitar was never my thing. I got small hands, well, I know that's an excuse, but I just, from my background, I was always into music, and as soon as I realised through hip hop, as soon as I realised that I can manipulate two records and make a beat longer, that was it. I was just started to make music from then on. So, and I got a rapper who rapped on top of the beats, and then my ultimate goal then was to find the records. That's why I got such a big collection, is to find the records that they used to use in those days back in the 70s and the 80s with the hip hop, all the old funk records. And find two of the same record, and then get them on the turntables, and just repeating that. There's a little. It's called a break. So I don't know if you probably don't know much about it.
I don't. He's looking at my vacant expression, listeners.
Well, say Aerosmith's "Walk This Way," which was done by Run DMC. Mm-hmm. There's a beat at the beginning of that. So if you get two of the same record on the turntable, and you can play one, and then crossfade over to the other one and play the other ones, and then you'd keep repeating that. You spin the record back and you'll keep repeating it. So basically you're playing one, crossfade into the other side, play the next beat, and then you spin the other one back, and then back and forth, and then you keep the beat going on, and then the rapper would just rap on top.
Now I'm going to ask, as a complete ignoramus, does that not completely ruin the records? Does that mean you can't play them again
after a while? No, not after a while. It does kind of, you start getting a bit of a hiss and a bit of obviously the grooves going down in the record. So it's quite a few. You could use them for quite a while. I still got records I can use.
Did you ever do DJing for weddings and parties?
I've done one. I've always refused to do weddings because it's kind of stuff that I don't want to play.
Yeah.
But I did do one for my friend, and he likes the same music as I do. So, yeah, he loved it. I was playing kind of old school house and stuff like that. So.
Brilliant. And this show's called Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls, so I always ask people, what's been your kind of worst DJ moment where you've just wanted the ground to open up and swallow you?
I suppose when no one dances and no one likes your music, so...
have you got a, you know, fail safe when that happens?
Oh yeah, there's always, you can always put a tune on, a disco tune or someone that someone knows. So, you know, a lot of people nowadays, they only dance to some stuff that they know. So, which is unfortunate, because I always like new stuff. I always like to hear new music. So, I did play at the Isle of Wight Festival doing a Latin set, which I do like Latin kind of dance stuff. And it's during the day, but the thing was, Amy Winehouse was on at the same time, so there wasn't many people in my section, in my tent, and no one wanted to dance to it, so then I had to kind of put something that everyone else, you know, everyone knew, so...
Yeah, well, that was a bit of a bummer being put up against Amy,
yeah,
wasn't it?
So that was a bit of a downer, that one, but...
But you were there?
Yes.
You were there?
I was there playing against Amy.
Yeah.
She won.
Yeah, but she probably said afterwards, I was up there playing against Andy Jones,
yeah,
and it was a tough run call, but I think I just nailed it.
I think she was a little bit drunker that festival as well, wasn't she?
Might have been.
Anyway.
Yeah. And you've also played at the Bestival?
Bestival? I played at Bestival most years with my band called, not my band, it's called Cooley Haste, and John Tulip, who kind of is Cooley Haste, does, and I think you know him through the spoken word, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah,
so,
I do, perform yeah. with him. Times.
So we performed at the Bestival a number of times, yeah, doing our little hip-hop, old man hip-hop.
I don't think Cooley would like you to call it old man hip-hop, would he?
Well, we're all a bit old now. We're in our 40s, so yeah, but it's all conscious lyrics, and there's a good message, and the beats are fat, so you know, it's a good laugh.
I like that, the beats are fat. I'm going to try and get that into some sort of conversation
with
this
a pH
week. Yeah. Yeah, okay, it doesn't matter with my lot, they won't know and they won't care, but that is my challenge to myself.
Excellent.
Yes, and I suggest anybody listening does it too, I think it'd be fun. So the beats are fat.
The
like
beats
it.
Are fat.
I like that, yeah. But I'll have to do it and try and cause offence, won't I?
That's it.
Yeah, impossible for me. And you're not a native islander, you were telling me.
No, I'm from Portsmouth originally. Moved over here in 87, around 87, 88. But my dad had the King Lud from around 1982.
That's the King Lud in Ryde,
yes.
Right by the pier.
And that was, back in those days, it was, I mean, I think it's full now, you know, people going. But back in those days, with all the holidaymakers and all the locals, it was, you know, the place to be. It was really good, yeah.
And were the scooters?
Yeah, every year the scooters just come
around.
For
the rally in August.
Sometimes there was a little bit of a trouble, sometimes, most of the times it was good.
How, I mean, I suppose you were quite young. How old were you when he took that on?
Well, I was 12 in 1982, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. But I kind of grew up... I moved there from my mum's, moved over to the Isle of Wight. My dad said to me, you can only come and move in if you do a chef course at the college. So I had to become a chef.
How did that go? It's very creative, like music, isn't
well,
it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I do... I am creative with the old food. If you, you know, speak to my kids, they always say, oh, you know, it's a dad's thing again. Oh, God.
What's your signature dish?
vegetarian chili or curry. Curry or spaghetti.
Nice.
So I'm a bit of a veggie, so...
At the King Lud, you must have so many stories of when things went horribly wrong.
There is a few. There's a couple of horrific things I've seen... I don't know if I want to repeat it on the radio.
No, maybe funny, sort of funny bad. Have you got any of those? Slipping on the, you know, the beer mat or something, I don't know.
Would have just thrown darts, you know, there's always things going on. There's so many, I mean, you know, after hours stuff and, I can't, it's, you know, it's just one of those things, you know, my memory's not as good as it used to be.
But it's a place where you're going to see all life, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
Somebody walks in as sober as a judge in one frame of mind and leaves in a completely different place, don't
they? Well, that's it.
And what goes on in between is anyone's guess.
Well, in those days as well, the pub used to shut it, like, was it 2 or 3 in the afternoon and then open back up at 6?
That's right.
Yeah, so
It's hard to imagine those old-fashioned opening hours, isn't it?
So you didn't get really anyone that's really massively drunk, because obviously the pub shut at 11 and then everyone used to go on to nightclubs and stuff like that, so which you don't get nowadays. They just open all night now, don't they, pubs? So
yeah. Do they still have lock-ins, or is that...
I don't know, I don't really...
Not that I was ever invited to them. They're far too sort of edgy and exciting for anybody to want me there, but yeah.
No, it was a good, exciting time. I mean, growing up in a pub and...
That must have been every teenage boy's dream, surely.
Yeah, it was. It was
and,
good.
And did you, you know, have a little tipple of a night?
All day. All day, as soon as you got in there, you know, from when...
From school.
From about 11 to 12 when I was working in the pub, you know, we would just be drinking all day, basically. But then you never really got drunk, because it was just, you know, halves here and there and, you know...
Do you think it taught you to handle your drink or put you off?
Yeah, I'm not a big drinker. So my dad was, and my brother, he's a bit of a drinker, but I was never a big drinker, so... No, it didn't... I mean, it's everything in moderation, isn't it? But I don't like the feeling of being drunk, so...
And I guess when you see other people in that state and where it can lead, you know, when you've just got no intention of that happening and then, bang, something has happened that you wish hadn't, that must be horrendous.
But the thing is, nowadays, the young people seem to be just drink as much as they can and then they're vulnerable, obviously.
Yes.
I mean, I work for the council... doing video projects, and we've done a project called Booze Hogs, which is a film we made, a 10-15 minute film about young people in that kind of vulnerable situation. It was all storyboard, it was proper, like a proper mini film. It wasn't like an ad for what they called it, an information kind of video, or you mustn't do this, you mustn't do that. It was like a proper story from beginning to end. There's two main characters. One character's was the nice guy, and one character was the bad guy, and once they start drinking, the roles reversed, and that's what the film was about.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah, so at the end of it they kind of had a fight between each other because of, you know, something that went on. But if you want to see it, it's on vimeo.com. It's called Booze Hogs. It's about 10 minutes long. It's about a youth project that we did, and all the music on there is done by me, and it's, you know, go and watch it, it's good.
Yeah, made by the son of a publican, so you know what you're talking about.
Well, the youth group is called Streets Ahead, so all the kids on there, we all kind of done it together, so we wrote the script and they all acted in it, and yeah, it's really good, actually. Fantastic. And we done another film after that called Stubbed Out, which was about smoking, so that was another film, a bit of a weird concept on that one as well. So they're not, as I said, they're not all infomercials, kind of, you mustn't do this, you mustn't do that. It's just showing, you know...
Life.
Yeah.
Real life, yeah.
Yeah.
No, brilliant.
And the one before that, it was called... The first one we done was called Gum Fu in Enter the Clinic.
Okay.
Which is about chlamydia.
Shall we leave it there? Andy, it's been an absolute joy talking to you. And I shall look forward to hearing your Funky Art and Soul show very soon.
Brilliant, thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for your time. Cheers. You've been brilliant.
Stay social and get in touch. Give us a call on 01983 240 666, or add us on Skype. It's Vectis.radio. The World Wide Web never felt so local. So local.
Hello and welcome back to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis. And earlier we were talking to our brand new, yet-to-be-revealed presenter, Andy Jones, about his Funky Art and Soul show, so coming to a mixing desk near you very soon. But for the second half, we've got our very own Marco. Hello, Marco.
Good afternoon, Joan.
Hello. Now, Marco doesn't know, but every time I see his lovely smiling face, my heart lifts, because I know I'm in really safe hands. So always really delighted to see Marco. What have you been up to, Marco, since we last spoke?
Well, loads of stuff. I've been to France, and I'm away there, blatant plug, in 2 weeks' time for a month. So I've done that, and we're sort of rebranding, as you know.
Yes.
Pretty soon. So the main man's asked me to start stripping down the studio, and we're going to be repainting in the next couple of weeks.
Fantastic.
So we've been doing a few bits, and there's loads going on behind the scene, which we can't announce yet, but it'd be great. And I'll keep busy.
So you're a man with his finger on the pulse?
Might be. I don't know about that. But, yeah.
So when I came in, you were up a number of ladders simultaneously, it looked like, putting up posters. And
that's right. We've got some old posters, and obviously, because we'll be going FM soon, we're taking all those posters down for the rebranding, and everything's going to come off the wall, the pictures, the lot. And I'm led to believe the studio and the green room will be painted in the next 2 to 3 weeks. So it's being prepared for that.
Fantastic. So who's going to be up the ladder with the overalls on doing that then?
But it won't be me. I'm in France drinking some red wine. I'm just doing the groundwork.
Right, just get that out there now. Just make that very clear.
That's it, yeah.
It will not be Marco.
It will not be me.
Okay. Well, you do so much, don't you? Brilliant. And last time we were here, we were talking about your prior life as a firefighter.
Yeah. We covered sort of a fair bit of what we do. And I think I may have touched on, I went to a wedding last year. I'm not sure if we covered that, for the Romanian boy with the eye problem. I'm not sure if we touched on that. Well, that was actually a year, 2 days ago. Our time flies.
Remind people what that story was.
The basis of that story was I used to deliver some out-of-date fire engines to Romania. And we'd done it about 5 or 6 trips. We started just after Ceaușescu left the planet.
But that was your idea, wasn't it?
That was my idea, yeah.
To get these fire engines that would have just been demolished, I suppose.
Well, yeah, they were just sold on to sort of Africa
scrap,
and places
really,
like that.
But you decided they might have a second life and do some good.
Less than 40,000 on the clock. So we've
brilliant
got that.
Idea.
We delivered those. And on the very last trip, the chief fire officer of a place called Suceava, which is a city up in the mountains right next to Russia, his boy had a bad accident. He got stabbed in the eye with a stick from his friends just playing around. And he lost a sight. And cutting the story short, we raised quite a few bits of money, £9,000 it was. And we got him over, and his eyesight was saved within reason. And he got married last May, and he gave out the invitation to go back to the wedding. So I met his family again, which was very, very touching. And here we are, 1 year on. Their first anniversary, so good luck to them.
Oh, it's just wonderful, isn't it?
And they're a great couple anyway, and they're both doctors.
Yeah.
They're both doctors now, and last time I spoke to him via a wonderful Facebook, which is good and bad, isn't it?
Yes.
I do struggle with it, but occasionally it's great. He tells me they're going to work in Britain or Ireland for a year.
Wonderful.
So I shall bring him in when he comes, and we'll interview him on Vectis. I'll get him on your show.
Isn't that
you.
Lovely? So that's a complete 360, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And all because you did a really good thing. I mean, it's wonderful.
It just came about. It was right time, right place for his family, really.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I don't suppose it would have happened.
But you must feel and be treated as part of his family now, I would imagine.
I believe so. I mean, the night before we came home, we had a big meal around his parents' place. And so his parents was brought up under the communist regime, and his father was a very sort of staunch communist. And we had a great chat, and I'd done a sort of a chat and said thanks very much for invitations and that. And it was quite tearful because his father actually said, under this sort of system, I may have got it wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear that was quite humbling, really.
Yes.
And he said, thanks, you know, there are good people out there, and thank you very much. And it was quite tearful.
Yeah.
We had a few hugs and a few palinka, which is a local vodka. And, it's good. So I do keep in touch with his family, although I can't speak hardly any Romanian, and he can't speak hardly any English, but it's good through Facebook.
Yeah, lovely. And you can share photos and happy smiles.
That's
which
right.
is what you've helped create, which is lovely. I was down at the waterside down at Totland,
yeah.
You know, don't often go there, don't want people thinking I'm a lush, but we were down, there was a beautiful sunset, you know, setting up for a gorgeous sunset one night, and sitting outside having a drink by the sea there, because it's a fantastic spot, I don't know if you know it, but it's beautiful. And lo and behold, 2 fire engines turned up, and everybody's panicking slightly, but it was the freshwater. Now, what do you call them? They're not the gang.
They're called retained firefighters from freshwater. Yeah.
Yeah, and they were there basically having a glorified tea break because they were on training.
Right.
And to see them, because as you know, that's a dead end road, and it's one way.
Yeah.
So these massive red, you know, fire engines came down, and I think there were some cubs down there.
Yeah.
And because they were just delighted to see these firefighters all sort of spill out of, and they were allowed to go in and sit in the driver's seat and have a look at all the equipment. So it was just fantastic, you know, great PR exercise, really.
Well, that's it. I mean, they do get bad press, like all the public services now, really. So I won't get on my box for that one. But it's still a good PR thing. And young kids still like fire engines and firemen.
Yeah.
Or firefighters, as we should say.
They kind of did themselves a lot of favours. I don't know. They just came across as such lovely guys.
Yeah, yeah.
and you know, they were posing for photos. They were just really, really genuine, honest. And you sit there and you think, God, you know, you'd lay down your life for someone, or you'd risk your life for someone.
That's part of it, yeah.
Yeah, and I know that's an obvious thing to say, but it's massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know, honest Joe in the street, probably, you know, would who? How many other people would do that? It's a big thing, isn't it?
It is. There's a guy on Facebook. His name's David Pike, and he writes a few books now he's retired. And he's got into sort of a platform where he wants loads of firefighters that have died in the job to be recognised. As he said, the sad thing is that over the years, they just slide away. The name's gone. And he set up a site. And apparently in London, there is going to be a statue erected for all, not just the people, the firemen that was killed in the Blitz, for the... on that statue will be the plaques of all these other people. And the other day, apparently, in 1956, which I know is a long while ago, three firemen died in the Googe Street fire, which is a big big underground up there. Loads of different people.
And the King's Cross one.
King's Cross, yeah.
Years ago,
yeah.
That one, wasn't it?
And all those sort of people, he said, should be given some recognition, because they do slide in history, don't they?
Of course. And
so good on him.
Yeah, and I think it's something people don't like to think about, I suppose, isn't it? They don't like to think that, as we were talking last time in depth about how you are often the first emergency service at the scene of an accident, for example.
That's right.
So the sights you see and the job at its darkest and you know, most heartfelt, it must be very difficult.
Yeah, and you do get sort of weird things, because one of the guys on the watch, I think he's retired and left the island now, but they used to be called RTAs, but I think they've changed them to RTCs, which is road traffic collision now, because someone said you can't have road traffic accidents. Okay, we'll leave it at that. But we was tipped out, which is a term for sort of going to the call, and the call come in for a blue Peugeot on its roof that left the road just outside Wroxall with a child and a young lady involved. And the guy on our watch, he lived in Wroxall, he had a blue Peugeot, and his wife has just taken the kid to school. So we switched off of air and phoned in, and to establish we're not going to his wife, surely.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
They couldn't say. So when we turned up, apart from being, you know, the adrenaline's running, we've got to keep him away, and as luck would have it, it was come on, not luck, but
yes,
for him, fortunate, it wasn't his family. So on top of that, on the island, you can sort of get involved with your own family.
Yes, indeed, indeed. But I think we were talking about the difference on the island. But you're getting the same type of collisions, not to use the word accident, but incidents, but just on a smaller scale, I suppose, than would in a London or Portsmouth.
That's right. I mean, we haven't got any motorways, but as you know, the military road can become
lethal.
Like a fast strip. And as I said on the earlier interview, when I arrived, we had 9 fatalities in that summer. And they said, because people look at the scenery, the other people come down the other way and look at the scenery, head on crash. But we always, there's quite a few road traffic accidents even now, and I think you always have it, because I used to be part of a crash tender in London that just went to car crashes and train crashes. And you see people, we used to go to the manufacturers of different car companies, especially like Volvo, there are others, but Volvo, and they built these cars to such a spec to safeguard for the driving. And people then drive faster. You naturally do it. You know, when airbags come out, say, well, I'm protected, so I put my foot down. Crunch zones and all that. You know, and so it's never ending. People will always drive fast, and you always have fatalities.
That's the thing, isn't it? With all technology, people bring out the next thing and the next, but it doesn't. It solves a problem for a moment,
and
then, like you say, whether it's a hacker or whatever, it's somebody will get round it.
Yeah.
And then that means that somebody's got to then invent something else to get over that problem.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that's human nature, though, isn't it?
What
you're talking about.
It is. So that's sort of one side of it. And it's the same with trains. I don't know if you travel on the London Underground. They've got the newer platforms have got like big glass screens.
Yes, down at Canary Wharf.
Which are like,
and
you know, to stop the jumpers, as they call. But they're getting around that now. The people, just as the glass doors are opening and the tube doors are opening, people are trying to jump down between the gap.
Oh, please.
So, you know, there are always going to be these people.
Mm. No, you can't safeguard against absolutely everything and anything, can you? I mean, because you've got that human nature is there, and that's the unpredictable. That's the thing that's not given, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't legislate for that. But do you have reunions, you know, like school reunions? Do you have your firemen reunions?
Before I retired, I used to, because I was at Newport, which was the full-time station on the island, and I used to run a retired firefighter's Christmas do. And it was because there was nothing on the island at all. And I thought it was quite sad. A lot of these old boys, you know, they're just all trotting around. They want to have a chat. So we got it up and running, and we had it on the station for quite a few years. And then I retired myself. And luckily, the lads are continuing with it.
That's fantastic.
So it's good. So for, you know, you're getting people there that some of them are in their 90s.
And they must have so many stories to tell.
Yeah,
because they weren't doing a desk job, were they?
No.
They would do an everyday sort of drongo job.
It's just hands-on sort of stuff. And you've got people on there that used to be in the Navy, because they used to recruit from the Navy only in the early days. And some of these old boys are in their 90s. They're just walking history.
Mm.
So, yes, there is a reunion once a year. It's not at the fire station, because that's been sort of taken up for space. They have it at the Masons Lodge around Newport or somewhere else. So I go to it annually.
Oh, good for you.
And it raises a few bob for charity.
Yeah, lovely. One of my flatmates, yonks ago in the 80s, he was a fireman. He was actually a dancer, but he couldn't earn a living from dancing. He was a very good dancer, but he couldn't make a living out of it. So he retrained as a fireman. But obviously, we might think there's no link at all, but being a dancer, obviously he was incredibly fit.
Yeah.
So it was quite a natural transition in one way. And he did very well, and then he got his heavy goods, is it heavy HGV license to drive the fire
trucks.
Engine. Yeah. And so he did all that, did very well. And he had a bit of a crush on one of my friends. And she was working on the North Circular Road in a big office block on the North Circular in London by Wembley there. And it was unrequited, I have to say, Marco. You know, she was not keen on him at all. But he was one of those who wouldn't take no for an answer.
Yep.
And one day I was at home and I got this phone call from her. And she said to me, you know, it was you, wasn't it? It was you. It's all your fault. And I thought, well, whatever it is, might well be. But, you know, I have no idea what you're talking about at the moment. So I said, what? And she said, oh, don't play the innocent with me. I know what you've done. And I thought, whatever's wrong with her? And she said, you could have got me the sack. And I said, just calm down and tell me what has happened. And she said, let's just call him M for now, who shall be nameless. M scaled my building and appeared at my office window. Just as her boss, a man with a weak heart, had come into her office and saw this person at the window, you know, in black, kind of probably looking, I don't know, you know, balaclava on.
Like the bloke out the milk tray,
haven't? Well, that's what he was doing. He was delivering her a box of chocolates.
Right.
Now, I would have been delighted.
Yeah.
Should somebody have risked their life sort of scaling a, you know, 50-foot building for me, but she wasn't pleased.
No,
and I think knowing her, she probably just opened the window and gave him a slight shove, and he
and away he went.
Yes, but no, not thrilled. So that came to naught. But I presume he was, you know, kind of, I don't know if I think he suffered at the lashings of her tongue more than anything else, and carried on his, you know, to be a firefighter. But yeah, so perhaps those skills, perhaps not everybody should have them, Marco, if they abuse them.
Well, yeah, it's just reminded me, he's still in. Employed by the fire service, so he'll be known as L, as a letter L. He did supplement his income when he first started as a strippogram.
Oh.
And he was a real fit rugby player.
Yeah.
And he was a good looking lad, and he used to make a few bob, and the girls used to go potty.
And this was as a firefighter, so he was dressed as a firefighter.
He was dressed as a firefighter, and he'd turn up at these, you know, he had to have permission from the chief. But he turned up at these do's, and I thought, what's going on here? And it would only go on the island because it's so small, so you meet them all, and I thought, I recognise this guy. And, you know, eventually the gear would come off, and these girls would go potty. But the trouble was, you know, we love him, you know, and they was following him around, and he had to stop.
Oh.
Because you do get this sort of crossover from just enjoying it to sort of, what do they call it? I can't think of the word, when people were sort of stalking in its early days, yeah.
Mm, no, to be guarded against at all costs.
Yeah.
So were you ever tempted to sort of form a full Monty with him?
No chance. Not a chance. No, he was super fit and all sorts. No, he's a lot younger as well. Good luck to him.
Yeah.
But he's now quite a high-ranking officer.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you want to just sort of give out his name?
No.
Just a thought. Thought that somebody might be listening. Would be ever so grateful for that information there,
no,
Marco.
No.
Make somebody's weekend.
Oh, great. Yeah, no, you go mad. But yeah, there are some people like that. You know, at Lewisham, where I was originally, I think one of the guys there used to be a ballet dancer or something like that on one of the watches. So yeah, there's all walks of life. Join the service. It's brilliant.
And do you get many people that join up thinking it's one thing, sort of superhero all the way, and then realise actually it is quite, it's very gruesome and I should imagine very emotionally taxing and draining?
Yeah, you do. And at training school, you're at training school for 4 months. The first 6 weeks is a bit like the army, you know, you're sort of drilling you and all that. And I think it's a semi-break to see how you can sort of take your job forward. But there was loads of people that got to around about the 12th week and said, this is not for me. Because you do physical training as well as drills, and you practice. Then you do loads of classroom work, you know, mathematics, science, hydraulics and things. And then you have to, them days you were shown slideshows of horrific trains and car crashes. To just get you sort of in the flavour, so to speak. So when you go onto your station for the first time, you're not absolutely immune from it. And lots of lads are thinking, I can't handle that. Because I was shown loads of slides of the Moorgate underground crash.
That was in the 80s, wasn't it?
That was in the late 70s, actually,
70s, yeah.
And, you know, that was in colour. And it was quite horrific sort of stuff. They wouldn't do it now. I don't suppose they could do it. You know, yeah, they'd have a look at that. And then you go to the fire station. And if you had a real sort of, what they call a real good going job, which was like rescues to be done, and there was plenty of flame in it, they'd say, right, in you go, boy, you know, first in, have a look. Where now it would be classed as sort of post-traumatic stress.
Well, I was going to say, you know, even now, though, that must be a thing amongst firefighters, surely.
Yeah, I'm sure it lays in the back of your head, as I said before. It just, you know, just as I'm talking to you, I can visualise certain jobs that you go on. But there is a... or I would imagine there still is a black type of humour, and it's not nasty, but there is a sort of a black type of humour that you go back to the station, you wash up, you kit the trucks out, have a cup of tea, cut a few jokes, and away you go for the next job, you know. And I think that sort of way of living on the station helps you get through it.
Yeah.
It's only when perhaps you retire, you'll see things on the telly and you'll think, God, that reminds me of whatever.
Yeah. Going back again, but I remember London's burning and the towering inferno. How realistic were they, or were they really glamorised to the hilt, do you think?
London's burning the first few series was very spot on. It was filmed at a place called Dockhead anyway. They had to get permission from London to film there. And the characters that portrayed in the first couple of series, that is London, without a shadow of a doubt. There was 7,500 firemen, firefighters, and you're going to get rogues, villains and jokers. You always do. And that was spot on, that series. The Tower Inferno is a bit more of an American sort of thing. But, you know, there we are. It's high-rise firefighting.
Yeah, I mean, that must be a different game altogether, mustn't it?
Yeah, it's a completely different... which, luckily, they don't have on the island.
No.
On the mainland, certainly in London, you do practice on what they call high-rise firefighting, which is you've got a problem getting water up, getting lifts down.
Yeah.
And all sorts. It's
totally
a completely different
technique
and
totally different.
And they lose, I think about six firefighters a year. It used to be about 12, because of the nature of the job. You know that you will ultimately give the all if you have to.
Yes.
And that's what really annoys me, when the fire service and the other three services get rubbished. You know, not talking politics, but I thought myself, without these people.
Good God, I mean, where would we be? And it is something.
And you get people say, well, you didn't have to join. No, we didn't.
No, but thank goodness we did. You did. You know, I salute you, for sure.
But, you know, the job will go on. You always need them. You will always need them. Because if you say people will car crash, fires will always happen. The modern stuff is now, I believe, is the vapour type things and phone charges and all that. All these are the new modernisms that set fire to people's houses nowadays. You always have something.
I think people are very laissez-faire about that, aren't they? And they're very ignorant and I don't mean that rudely, but I, you know, until you see something, you think, really? You know, that little thing can cause all that?
Yeah.
And sleeping with your mobile phone under your pillow.
Yeah.
when you've got it on charge is a really bad idea, isn't
it?
But people do it, don't they? In case they miss the call or miss the text or you know, miss the notification. But it's madness, isn't it? So if you sleep with your mobile phone under your pillow, don't.
Well, it's like my sister-in-law, children. They don't turn the phone off. They're always tired in the morning. And I said, well, I'm so tired. I said, turn the phone off. Well, I can't. People might want to get in contact. Well, they won't. They never did before.
They can wait.
They can wait. Just let me. But yeah, so they sleep with it under the pillow and all sorts. Everything's on charge.
And I didn't know until this weekend when I was with a friend and she put her vape. Plugged her vape in. I didn't even know that they needed charging. I mean, that's how kind of out of touch I am. So what happens with those? What's the dangers with those? Just
well, there's a couple of plates inside, like little electrical plates, and they charge up. And then what happens is the liquid's poured in. As far as I'm aware, I mean, I don't smoke. It passes over these plates, and as you draw through, it converts to a smoke or a vapour. And these plates either get too hot, especially the cheaper ones, or the fluids that they buy are cheaper, and they react with the plates. The plates get stuck, they melt, they continue charging up, and then obviously it burns the plastic, goes down the wire into the plug, away you go. Just like the old television sets, you know, if you left them on overnight, they got hot.
So these brand new these latest appliances, state of the art appliances, are actually behaving like your dodgy old, like you say, your dodgy old telly kettle,
or the old paraffin heaters and all that sort of thing, going way back, same sort of thing.
That were really lethal. Yeah. And we thought we'd done away with all that.
Yeah, there's always going to be a modern
equivalent
problem. Yeah,
yeah, because people, I think, look at them and they are so sort of swish and, like I say, state of the art and all sleek and slim and beautifully designed. And they don't look like they've got any risk inherent in them at all, do they?
I mean, another example, talking about modernism and the fire service, my boy is, my son rather, can't say his boy's 36, but
he'll always be a boy.
He's a car mechanic, and loads of cars that are coming in are these hybrid cars, which, you know, sort of electric and petrol.
Yes, yes.
And there's a specialist way of having to repair those. But also I know the fire service are completely being retrained, because you can't touch these cars if they're in a crash, and the batteries get put out of line a bit, the car can become totally live. You know, there's a new way now of having to extract people from these car crashes. So it's always something they will have to learn. But hybrid's the new problem, because there's masses of batteries, isn't there?
God, dear. Well, these are things that just wouldn't even occur to me, but now you're explaining them, it's obvious.
And what some of the lads were telling me, I said, well, I wouldn't have thought that. They said, no, it just goes on and on. They have to establish that car's not live before they can touch it.
Good grief.
You know, you won't walk away from a jolt from one of those.
No way.
Like 500 watts or 500 volts or whatever they call
it. Doesn't bear thinking about, does it?
So there we are, so modernism. You're always going to need a fire service.
I mean, good and bad. It's good that there's still... And are there still plenty of people signing up for it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, the way the world is for employment, there's probably 20 for everyone, I would imagine, applying for the job.
But people still are, you know, keen to, to be recruited. That's good.
So,
that's wonderful.
You know, just have to go what the government decides to do.
Is there a standard height?
There was, but they'd done away with that, I think, in the 80s, because that was classed as unfair. You had to be above 5'6". You had to have a chest expansion of 2 to 3 inches, physically fit and under 31 to apply, and up to 33 if you was ex-naval. But I think all that was done away with under equal opportunities and things like that. So I think you can be, what's the word, tall and short.
Yeah, and also they're women. Recruited, so you couldn't have had the chest expansion
But you have to keep fit, and I know for the women they do keep fit.
Yes,
they have to.
Well, yeah, you can't do the job unless it couldn't be efficient. Yeah. Well, I mean, what a fantastic joy! Thank you so much for jumping in, Marco. It's
pleasure.
Been a pleasure as always, and for alerting us to some of the new risks out there. It's always really good to know these things. And thank you to our new presenter Andy Jones for jumping in too. It was lovely talking to you both. Have a lovely weekend.
Thank you very much, and yourself.
Enjoy the sunshine, and thank you so much for listening. Please join me next week when my special guest will be a lovely lady called Vicky, and she's transgender, and she'll be here to talk about all things related to that, and she's here to define exactly what that is and just explain things, really. So she's a lovely lady, and I can't wait to talk to her. So please join us next Friday for that at 1. In the meantime, have a fantastic weekend, and please follow us on Twitter at Vectus Radio and Facebook. And if you're interested in a career in radio, have a little look at the Vectus Radio Training School at www.4ps.org.uk. Not just for radio skills, but building confidence and all sorts of other things. So it's a really great thing for young people to do. Okay, like I said, have a lovely weekend, and thank you. It's bye-bye from me.
www.vectusradio.com.